civics education in the context of learning disabilities, or maybe more properly, learning problems. Okay, so this is The Great Shalom, Overcoming Learning Problems, and my name is Sharon Sarles. I think every parent and every teacher will find this useful. At the time of recording this, we are facing a momentous election, and I want to talk to you, therefore, about civics education. Civics education. Now, when we think about civics education, normally we're thinking about homeschooling, at least in Texas. So let me explain what that's all about. But let me explain to you how vitally important this is. I think nearly no one... almost no one understands the necessity, the seriousness, and the paucity of resources. But I'm going to give you some resources at the end, some of which are free. And nobody understands how difficult this is for the learning disabled student and how extremely important it is. So it really falls to the parent, because this is not being addressed in so many ways, at so many levels, and is so vitally important. Okay, so civics is understanding how to be a good citizen, as far as I am going to define it today. So when we say civics in Texas, we are thinking about the Leaper decisions. In Texas, the state constitution, from the beginning, guaranteed, no, that's wrong. It affirmed the right of parents to privately educate their children. The state constitution of Texas, when Texas was constituted as a state, affirmed the right, because it didn't guarantee, it didn't grant, because our rights are from God. And constitutions, in American way of thinking, grant the ability to government to govern to some limited extent, because our rights are guaranteed by God. And apparently I'm used to saying it incorrectly. Anyway, so the Texas Constitution affirms that. But in the 80s, that was called into question. And there was a court case that we often refer to as the Leaper case that affirmed that. However, it did provide that homeschoolers are asked to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, and civics. Of course, this is only reasonable, and also to keep some written records. This is all reasonable, and the homeschooling community has accepted this. Okay. Other states do not have as much rights, or another way of saying it is because they do have inalienable rights given to them by God. So other states have impinged upon the inalienable rights by interposing their supervision over the parents. And given the sad state of affairs in American education, namely that we rank at the bottom of the industrialized world and the bottom of the high-income countries, even though we spend the most on our children per capita, right? Oh, and ever worsening by statistics. Now, there are alternate stories, but the objectives tests say that our academic achievement is going down. We've even had to recenter the academic achievement tests in the college boards, and the college boards are made different, and the private schools have had enough of this nonsense, and now the College Board is key to the Common Core, which is ever lower. So So the private schools, the classical schools, have their own college board score. Do you know this? All right, their own college board test. Anyway, so back to civics. So we agreed to teach civics. And of course, that's a wise thing. Why isn't that being done in public school? I don't know. And where it is, often it is lost on the learning disabled students, quote unquote, air quotes, learning disabled students. So when a child is having difficulty reading or attending in class, paying attention, then they're spending more time in decoding and less time in comprehension, less time in the higher order skills. And often if they're taken out of the classroom to a resource room, they're taken out during social studies time. So this is a very serious situation. Social studies already is given short shrift in public school, taught poorly with the poorest resources imaginable, and even that is often not available to the learning disabled student, depending on how that's organized. So I am going to suggest that this needs to be taught at home in all cases, but especially for the learning disabled student. And so what to teach? Well, think about how you would like your child to behave when they're an adult. Are they going to be good citizens? Will they provide servant leadership? Or will they simply be wanting other people to care for them and be criminals? So think about this and put that content in that you want to come out, right? Start with the end in mind. So I think most people are just trying to make it from day to day and have a little fun, and they're not considering these things, and so are surprised when they have a bad outcome. How is it that we can have students, and not terribly young students, who are throwing paint on pictures of flowers in order to promote stewardship of the earth? It makes no sense. So if they think that there is global warming or change, we can't say warming anymore, right? Instead of reading statistics or working in terms of politics, they go into a museum and throw paint on a painting? Really? Okay, so this is an obvious example. Or they think they're going to improve the economic status of their community by picking up bricks that were delivered for them to throw into the plate glass windows of merchants, and then they're going to steal merchandise? So how does this help anyone? For that, see, do the right thing. You understand, which was written, produced, and started by an African American. So wonderful movie. Do the right thing. Okay. I agree with the sentiment in the title. So you think about what kind of citizen you want your child to be, and you train that. Now, you're going to need to do more than give book learning for that. You need to have modeling and you know, coming alongside and mentoring them. Okay. But in terms of the academics, what are you going to do? First, I want you to teach definitions. Teach them to notice what they're reading and teach them to argue from definitions. Dr. Marlene McMillan says, every definition has a destination. And it may not occur to you that we are getting some insinuation of contrary philosophy, contrary to the philosophy that gave America, the United States of America, liberty and prosperity and equality in terms of the law. What made America great is that the philosophy it was founded on, and there are competing philosophies, and one in particular. So for instance, don't call the United States a democracy. The founders of this nation were very concerned that the United States not be a democracy like France was at the time of the French Revolution, because they thought that this would be tyranny of the majority, or it would be momocracy. Today, when we see other nations who are ruled without liberty, it's really a tyranny of the few. But they claim that they're a democracy. So no, we are a republic, or if you want to say a democratic republic, fine, because that's what the founders meant, a democratic republic. There are other countries that are ruled by dictators that call themselves a republic, but nevertheless, know the difference. Know when somebody says democracy. Have your ears pricked up and find out what they're talking about. So we are a democratic republic. We believe in liberty and not merely in freedom, because freedom can be licensed, but liberty is freedom with responsibility. And you cannot have enduring freedom unless there is self-governance. You have to have self-controlled population, a population that has virtue and controls himself and does the right thing in order to have civic. And you need to have good freedom and civic in civic life, and you need to have self-governance to have liberty. And self-governance takes effort. If you want to be a slave, you can just sit back and let somebody else take care of you. But they're going to take care of you to the extent that they wish to take care of you. Somebody said, he who has the gold makes the rules. But if you want a society that's really nice to live in, you're going to live by the other golden rule, or the golden rule, that says, do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. So a nice situation is only where everybody follows that. And so, of course, there are some restraints for those people who can't or won't. But liberty is more than freedom. Liberty is freedom with responsibility. And perhaps it was Thomas Paine who said, those who would like to enjoy the fruits of liberty must endure the fatigue of supporting it. So you have to put in effort. You have to put in effort to make sure that the governance of your country is virtuous and not corrupt. We believe in equality before the law, but that's not equity. We believe in equality of opportunity, not equality of result, because equality of result would mean, by definition, a tyranny by those who decide what everybody gets to have. And it would be fundamentally unjust for the person who worked hard not to have more as a reward. And those who argue for equity think that there is a given pie. But those who believe in capitalism believe that wealth can be created. And so the pie is ever increasing. And so the people who are willing to work harder should get more reward. It's not a perfect system, right? And there is greed capitalism and there is conscious capitalism. And so, yes, I'm willing to entertain a conversation about how to make our economic system better. But better is not confining the pie in such a way that everybody gets an equal slice. And also, when this has been tried, notice that actually the small elite who make the decisions take more than their fair share of the pie. And in fact, I think this is something that would be useful to study, is the history of the Soviet Union. So, did you know that the Communist Revolution was almost a peaceful revolution? The only people who got killed were the elites when it first started, but then the Bolsheviks killed all the other communists. And maybe we should also study the history of Germany. Did you realize that the Nazi Party were socialists? They just had a different way of implementing it. Yeah, the Nazis are socialists. That's what the word Nazi meant. And from the beginning, the Bolsheviks would charge anybody they didn't like as being a fascist. Anybody that a Bolshevik didn't like would be called a fascist and be worthy of death, I suppose. Okay, so this is something we don't study. You don't study Communist Manifesto until you get into sociology theory, which is a junior course in sociology, but it shot through the intro text. It shot through our Common Core. It is shot through our Common Core. So I would suggest maybe for your high school student, read that, and maybe read Das Kapital, and maybe read Mein Kampf. Don't start there. I'm not saying to teach that. I'm saying for your high schooler, by way of comparison, so they're not ignorant, and so they can't be lied to, okay? So, argue from definitions. Learn logic. So that's probably about junior high school. Teach logic as such, and at the higher levels, do some comparative studies so that other things cannot be insinuated and not be noticed. And teach some servant leadership. So yes, we should teach civics. We should teach how the government is established. It's a very sad state of affairs when I see people have graduated from high school, seem to be relatively intelligent, and have no idea how the government is formed. I was sitting in a restaurant after having gone to the state capitol with a group of people. We were promoting a particular bill, and we were going to go up there and watch the testimony, as some doctors were going to testify, and the committee didn't permit the testimony, and we were disappointed. And in the hall, there was a lot of people in the hall. This one young woman offered prayer, and that was really good. And we went to the restaurant afterwards, but she said, well, you know, the committee is just, they're not hearing this, which obviously the population wants them to hear the testimony and send the bill to the legislature. So maybe we need to complain about their behavior to the governor. And I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, why? Okay, so she doesn't know that the governor of that state has the same interest as the most liberal people on that committee. But I said, why are you saying that? And she said, well, the governor is the boss of the legislature, isn't he? No. She said, well, why does the committee get to decide for the whole legislature? By that time, I'm slapping my head. So you don't even know how a committee works. The legislature has delegated to this committee to hear the bills and put for the good ones, and they'll be voted on. And of course, that's just the very basics that really any sixth grader ought to know, right? By the time you're in senior high school, maybe you could be trained a little bit more. We've got the Patriot Academy that's headquartered in the Austin metro area, and they send students up to go and argue. You know, they have a moot legislature, a mock legislature, and they argue, fill bills, and so forth. But at that time, they probably learn that most of what goes on in our state capitol is done in back rooms. And so the voting on the floor, which we get to see by sitting in the gallery, is mostly for show. So that's my state. And it's important to take your students to the Capitol building and show them around. Take them to City Hall. Take them to the Capitol building. Take them to a court and let them see how things are done. And if you can possibly afford it, take them to Washington, D.C., or the national capital of your country. And if you, as a citizen of your country, is not able, not permitted to go in and watch the doings of the legislative body, oh my goodness, then you need to get that changed. Also, you need to learn how to go into the office of your representative, right? Because they represent you. They work for you. You know, that's the way it works. So learn how to go in there and comport yourself in a intelligent manner so that you can speak when the time comes for something or against something. And by the way, I hear people, even who should know better, talk about the United States having three equal branches of government. No, that's not so. They were never intended to be equal. The legislative body was intended to be the powerful one, and then the executive branch was intended to be very much less powerful because the founders were not pleased with King George. And unfortunately, over time, that intention has withered away, and the executive branch is very powerful, and we have a lot of regulations that were never laws, they were never voted in by the legislature, and this is a major issue. And then the Supreme Court was the third, and they need to keep in check the other branches of government. And well, it looks like they did that reasonably well last week. Anyway, please study how your government works at appropriate level, elementary for your elementary school children, and increasing, so that by the time your child gets out of high school, they can be a servant leader in the society. They can be part of the self-governance, and you have to be able to supervise your representatives, or you're not being self-governing. Let me say that again. You have to supervise your representatives, or you're not being self-governance. So many people who get into politics as a profession, and we should have statesmen and not politicians, and that's the way the words were used in the founding. Politicians were bad, statesmen were good. But anyway, when somebody goes into politics as a career, they often end up thinking that they are rulers. This must change. And that's one reason why some states have legislatures that sit for only a short time. And whether or not that's practical or not, the point is that the founders wanted our legislatures to continue being farmers and businessmen and not to be politicians. There's so much more to be said here, but I want to be sure that you understand that your student who's diagnosed learning disabled is not going to be getting his civics in public school. It's questionable whether anybody is getting decent civics in public school at this point. So take it in your own hands, whatever your child is, but particularly if your child is learning disabled, and talk it through. Give them real life experiences. Don't depend on their reading. And of course they should have reading about this, and you need to find some good resources. So I just did a search, and oh my gosh, everything that came up on the first page was terrible. So let me suggest that you go to David Barton, you go to Rick Green, this is more high school level, you go to Huckabee has a free video, which may be more elementary level, and certainly at the high school level, you might want to check out Dr. Marlene McMillan, WhyLibertyMatters.com, and for the adults with college education, you might want to get into her free Wednesday night webinars. It's wonderful. I thought I knew something. Okay. So please go and get this right now. Go and get some resources. And if your child is in school, then maybe you can devote some of your holidays to this. A fine time is Thanksgiving. You can read what the founders said about Thanksgiving and maybe watch some movies, maybe a little more useful than an overage of football, okay? And maybe write a paper or do some traveling at Christmas time, and certainly devote some of your summer vacation, okay? This really is important, because you don't want to have a world where your child lives in a poor country ruled by tyranny. And I think it's pretty evident that that's the direction that we're going. It was several years ago, somebody else's administration, two or three administrations ago, when my father sent around some emails that he thought was funny, pictures of the president with his feet on furniture that was owned by the people. And I told him, Dad, probably not a good idea. Don't criticize this president unless you're really serious and willing to pay for it, because the price might be high. One time my dad took my advice. You know, you understand, he's an elderly man in this story. Another time I was unhappy with something that some bureaucrat had done. And he said, well, you should just blah, blah, blah. You don't take that. I said, Dad, you're acting as if we live in the United States. We no longer live in the United States. And he laughed. He said, oh, yeah, where do you think we live? And I said, I think we live in Eastern Europe. And he's laughed. I said, I'm not kidding. And he went to a straight face because he could see I was not kidding. When you have, I mean, we never had bribes in this United States. We never had bribes. But I have paid the IRS money I knew I didn't owe, and they knew I didn't owe, but they just could take it from me. I've been up to the state comptroller's office because they wanted to hassle me. So, and who knows what all else. I could go on and on and on. It's time we became better citizens. Every people have the government that they deserve. Hallelujah. But we're waking up. Revival is blowing through the land. Great awakening. And if you thought that the founders of this country were slack in their devotion to God in any way, you have been mistaught. David Barton has a little booklet called The Keys to Good Governance. He's a wonderful historian with lots of citations, great quotations. No, the founders of this nation knew that they were on a mission from God. Most of them had divinity degrees. You need to read what they wrote. Oh yes, they concocted an organization of government that would restrain the government with checks and balances. But they said never would this work if the men who ran it were not virtuous Christian men. And in every state but one, someone who ran for office had to pledge that they were from the heart devoted Christians. That one was South Carolina. And they said, only God. They didn't name the name of Jesus because they had some leading Jews in that colony. They were united in this, that we were a Christian nation, or at least a Judeo-Christian nation, with virtue. And only through virtue would we be able to contain our government, to make it a limited, a restrained government. This is the foundation of our equality. This is the foundation of our prosperity. This is the foundation for our liberty. Be sure you teach it to your children.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom Broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.
As always, you can write me, send me questions, send me prayer requests at info@greatshalom.org. Please send me some donations to pay for the airtime at P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. That's P.O. Box 971, Cedar, like the tree, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. Please also check out my books. You might like The Government Is Not a Village, which continues the discussion about educational policy. The Government Is Not a Village. You can get that by going to our site and clicking through, or you can go directly to www.lulu.com, and Lulu will print it and send it to you. Also, you might like a turnkey Bible study for you or for you and your friends, How to Leave a Legacy in Your Children. How to Leave a Legacy in Your Children, also available at lulu.com, www.lulu.com. Please, resource yourself. And may you be blessed, you and your children. Amen.